This is VK6 ARN. News West is a WA-based club, and we continue to deliver news, content to Sandgropers and beyond since 1931.
Good after evening, noon, and welcome to News West for the 5th of April 2026.
Hello everyone, this is Clive, VK6CSW, reminding you that tomorrow is the first Monday of the month, time for the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia's April Bulletin to go to air. This month, as well as the latest club news, I'll be reading some reminiscences written by Alan Cruther, VK3SM, now a Silent Key, of his long life in radio, first published in OTN in September 2014. Next, Andrew, VK3CAH, will tell us about broadcasting around the clock and the introduction of 24-hour medium-wave broadcasting. Everyone, RAOTC members and non-members alike, is most welcome to listen to the programme and to join in the callbacks afterwards. Tomorrow, Chris, VK6JI, will broadcast the RAOTC Bulletin at 8 a.m. local time on 80 metres on 3620 kHz and again at 10 a.m. on 40 metres on 7088 kHz. Also at 10 a.m, we have the Bulletin transmitted on 2 metres, 6 metres and 70 centimetres via the News West linked repeater system. At midday local time, Mike, VK8MA, has a 10-metre transmission on 28.450 MHz. Full details of all transmission times, frequencies and modes can be found on the RAOTC website at www.raotc.org.au or just Google RAOTC Broadcasts. If none of the transmission times suit you, you can download the audio file at any time from today from the club website. Everyone, RAOTC members and non-members alike, is most welcome to listen to the programme and to join in the callbacks afterwards. The monthly luncheon meeting. I'm pleased to report that the March lunch meeting at the 7 Mile Bar and Bistro went well, with two new members attending. The April meeting will be on Tuesday, April the 14th, at the same venue, the historic 7 Mile Bar and Bistro in Balcatta, starting at 11:30. Full details are on the club website. Non-members are most welcome to join in. If planning to attend, be sure to contact lunch coordinator Alistair, VK6ATX, as soon as possible. Alistair's email is vk6kif@bigpond.com. Once again, that's Alistair's old call sign, vk6kilo india foxtrot@bigpond.com. Tune in tomorrow for the April RAOTC Bulletin. Enjoy the programme and please join in the callbacks afterwards. 73 from Clive, VK6CSW.
Later this month, I'm travelling to Victoria to attend RASA's management team meeting, which we're running in the 2 days following the Antenna Palooza event on the 18th and 19th of April. Most people at present would shudder at the prospect of travelling to Victoria for a weekend event, what with fuel costs going through the roof. However, if you're going to be over that way anyway, drop in. It's all camping, caravanning and swagging, BYO everything, and there's plenty of takeaway food available nearby. There's no need to book, and there are no camping fees. Just rock up. Antennapalooza.net.au is the website. You may wonder why I'm flogging what's basically a Victorian event. It's simply because if you're disappointed that you can't go to Victoria this month, you can console yourself with Ham Campshin in Western Australia next month. More on that elsewhere in this bulletin.
POTA, or Parks on the Air, is a fun program that encourages hams to get out into the park or other registered site and make contact with as many fellow hams as possible to make the activation of at least 10 contacts. Once each season, a specific weekend is nominated as the Support Your Parks activity, where POTA activators will meet up and take advantage of the fact many others are doing likewise to boost their park awards. April 18th and 19th is the Autumn Activation Weekend, and if you've never been involved with POTA before, it's a good opportunity to meet up with others that are setting up in a park and see how it's done. I'm certain they will welcome you, and if you wish to make a call, we'll happily hand over the mic. Closer to the event, we will announce any locations where people will be meeting up. There is usually one in Perth, often at Wireless Hill, and one or more in the Bunbury area. Listen out for more information in coming weeks. This is Darren, VK6EK, WA Parks Coordinator for Parks on the Air.
RASA's QTC magazine, April edition, is available to download from the RASA website, vkradioamateurs.org, or to view directly on screen at qtcmag.com. QTC is published monthly and is produced by a team of volunteers and accepts items from external contributors. Now here's the thing, QTC is free. No subscriptions or memberships required. We can do this because all work is done by volunteers and there are no printing or postage costs. There are some web hosting and software costs, and these are kept to a minimum and included in RASA's general operating expenses. Now this one's aimed at newcomers contemplating doing the foundation level exam. RASA produced a foundation level study guide a couple of years ago, and it's available to read online or download as a PDF. This study guide contains all of the information you'll need to pass the exam. In addition to text, it contains live links to purpose-made instructional videos and other information sources. We recently included on the last page of the foundation level study guide information about clubs that run courses. Take a look and see if your club is advertised there. All clubs were invited to submit their information for inclusion, and it's not too late. Send your information to RASA and it can be included in the next edition. The free foundation level study guide is available at the RASA website, vkradioamateurs.org. I'll repeat that, vkradioamateurs.org. And did I mention that the foundation level study guide is free? That's an immediate saving of $50 plus postage over the other option. I'm Bob, VK6POP.
Did you hear on last week's national news about yet another new portable activation program called Lakes and Lagoons on the Air? I'm David, VK6 Delta Sierra, from the VK6 Activators Group, to let you know, yes, it's a thing. Amateur radio has always sought to connect the world through challenges and recognition, whilst programs like IOTA, POTA or SOTA have marked milestones in the community. Lakes and lagoons are more accessible than a mountain and more abundant than an island. It's a global recognition program dedicated exclusively to these bodies of water. It's an international water body reference activation and hunting program for radio amateurs. The program, born in Chile, South America, now has grown to over 40 countries. Participants want to highlight the planet's water bodies, offering the national and global amateur radio community an exciting way to explore nature. Lakes and Lagoons on the Air is the bridge between the passion for radio and the conservation of our aquatic environments. The rules? Yes, there are rules, but they're easy to follow. Only 10 QSOs are required to validate their activation. The activation zone is within 200 metres of the high tide mark, and you can activate portable or from a mobile. References are slowly being added to the Australian reference map, and you can view that to see if there is a reference near you and look at all the other program details at www.llota, that's Lima Lima Oscar Tango Alpha, .app, that's APP. if you want to activate a lake or lagoon, and that also includes dams and reservoirs, by the way, but you can't see it referenced on the map yet, please let me know and I'll get it happening for you. My contact details are on the Lakes and Lagoons website, or look me up on QRZ. You have just been listening to David, VK6 Delta Sierra, from the VK6 Activators Group and National Manager of Lakes and Lagoons on the Air Australia.
On HF, VHF and UHF, via the VK6 linked repeater network and online, this is News West from VK6 ARN.
Hi, I'm Steve, VK6SJ, with another episode of Did You Know? Last year, I wrote a quick article on my thoughts towards applying for authorisation to operate my station with more than 400 watts. I have since applied for said authorisation, and my hope was that this article would describe the journey and what was at the end. Alas, I'm not at the end, so this is an update on the idea instead. Late last year, I prepared my application, and over Christmas, I had a registered assigner also review the documents with no ensuing changes suggested. With that, I submitted an application for a scientific license using my own ham call sign and a supporting document on my compliance to RPANSA standards and to address guidance from the scientific license guidelines. I wanted to take a responsible approach that ticks all of the scientific license requirements and use cases, the general requirements of all radio transmitters, in particular the RPANSA requirements, which are based on international standards, and my specific case. The document I attached with my application was based on the scientific license guidelines, which the ACMA have already stated is a path they would consider towards approving an application to use more than 400 watts. To make the document easier for ACMA to evaluate, I followed the same order as the guideline. First step in the document was to ensure that the scientific license was the appropriate path to take. There are seven stated purposes of the license, of which I could actually use any six of the seven stated purposes, and any one of the purposes is enough, so I believe that that box was ticked. The next steps were to demonstrate compliance with the RPANSA standards and the guidelines. Step 2 included details of my station and how any EME, that is electromagnetic energy, not Earthman-Earth, risks are mitigated. I also stated my qualifications, the purposes for which I intended to operate the station. My main drivers for the license application were as follows. Investigation into HF and VHF long-distance propagation, demonstration of equipment I sell in my day job, and as an aid into teaching other hams about the safe and authorised operation of high power. The rest of the document went into fine detail for each of these steps. I described the equipment, the bands I was applying for the licence for, which were 160 metres to 6 metres, the power output I was applying for, which was 1.5 kilowatts on HF and 1250 watts on 6 metres. I also described the location of the station, which is located on a 20,000 square metre block in a semi-rural area. I described the other licences in the general area. There were three within 2 kilometres of the station. The next and final step was to address the EME risks. In this area, I believed I ticked all the boxes. The antennas are all far enough from the ground to not require an exclusion zone. I described clearly the distance from the nearest residence to the equipment and to the adjacent property. I also used the RSGB online tool, which is very similar to the tool that was mandated by the ACMA as a suitable means of determining RPANSA compliance during the ill-fated trial in 2012. I was able to demonstrate that the station could be operated very safely and well within the stringent guidelines set by RPANSA. As a hygiene task, I also compared the results from the RSGB tool against the original tool used in the trial, and the results were identical. The RSGB tool does seem to reference the standards better. So, where am I currently with this application? I submitted the application on the 19th of January, I received a fairly quick response acknowledging that the ACMA has my application and that it had been assigned to an appropriate person for evaluation. I also received an email from the evaluator just stating that the licence is only issued for a year and may not necessarily be approved in subsequent years. I did respond to that email with some other questions, but no answer was forthcoming. The stated response from my application was that the application could take as long as 10 days to respond to. It's now the 3rd of April. I did give the ACMA a prod about 2 weeks ago to see how it was going with a quick response to say that the application would be responded to as soon as they are able to. I am trying to tread an amicable line here. The ACMA has stated many times in discussions with the WIA on this subject that the scientific licence is an appropriate path for this. This application is a test of that theory, and the WIA also have a copy of my application. I don't want them to knock it back because it's easier to refuse than to approve the application, so I'm taking a patient approach to this, so it doesn't just become some sort of political football. I also don't think me taking anything like a heavy-handed approach would have benefited me or the amateur community in general. Anyway, this is where I am with the application to date. I'll report back with more as the application progresses. Thanks for listening. This is Steve, VK6SJ, with another episode of Did You Know?
I find it interesting and encouraging that more people are exploring free DV. And although the free DV net continues to operate at 4 p.m. on Tuesdays on 40 metres, you can find free DV users on air on other days, again, usually on 40 metres, and 4 p.m. seems to be a popular time. Along with the free DV install is the free DV reporter, which is a useful aid because it lists everyone on the same band at the time who is transmitting and who is receiving. And you can even filter the list by frequency, in which case it will only list those who are on the same frequency as you. When a station is shown as receiving, it shows the signal to noise ratio for the received signal. Some of you may have, a few years back, purchased the DM1000 hardware device for FreeDV. This device won't work with the new RAID technology. So what does RAID stand for? That's R-A-D-E. It stands for Radio Autoencoder. And the RAID technology is a new approach to sending speech over HF radio. It combines machine learning with classical digital signal processing to send high-quality speech over HF radio, signal-to-noise ratios as low as minus 2 dB. The speech signal has an audio bandwidth of 8 kHz, but the RAID signal requires just 1500 Hz of RF bandwidth. The peak-to-average power ratio is less than 1 decibel, allowing efficient use of transmitter power amplifiers. The FreeDV app, as its name suggests, is free, and its technology is in the public domain. It's available for Windows, Mac, and Linux. Finally, if you tried FreeDV several years ago and didn't think much of it, try it again. The comparison between the old and the new is like chalk and cheese. You can read up on FreeDV at the website freedv.org, and that's where you download your installation files.
Covering Western Australia and beyond, this is News West, brought to you by WA Amateur Radio News, on air, online and on demand. This is VK6 ARN, and I'm Mark, VK4 MHQ.
Hello everyone, Anthony here, VK6 AXB, with an update from WAG, the West Australian Repeater Group. We've got a few things happening to tell you about, and anyone interested is welcome to come along. WAG's next technical activity session will be this coming Saturday, which is April the 11th, up at Wireless Hill in Ardross, starting around 10 a.m. and wrapping up around 3 p.m. We're grateful to Dave, VK6KV, and the members of the VHF group who suggested Wireless Hill as an option, as our last venue wasn't available for this Saturday. The idea of these tech sessions is to get together, break out the tools and test equipment, and get our hands dirty repairing, modifying, setting up and testing repeater equipment, ready for site visits. Specific jobs for this session include some cooling improvements to the VK6 RFM repeater to try and stop its overheating issue, plus continuing work on a couple of cavity filter sets, and we'll have plenty of other stuff to work on as well. The aim is to share skills and knowledge so more of us are able to keep the repeaters going, Plus, it's a great social catch-up, and if the weather's good, we might even fire up the barbie for a sausage sizzle. So if you're free on Saturday the 11th, why not come past for a look? Wireless Hill, Telefunken Drive in Ardross, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Saturday, April the 11th. The start of April also means that WAG's membership fees are due again for the year ahead. And thanks to those members who have already paid their renewals, an extra thanks to those who have given WAG a donation on top. If you aren't a current WAG member, why not join? It's still great value at only $25 for the year, and the funds help us pay for the licence fees and many other costs to keep the repeaters going. If anyone needs our bank details again, they're on the members area of the website, or email secretary@whiskeyalfaromeogolf.org.au and we'll send them. And we'd really encourage more members to get involved in WAG's day-to-day work, come along to a meeting or an event, or call in on the technical and general net and find out how. Speaking of meetings, WAG's next meeting is Monday, April the 13th. Note that there's no WAG meeting tomorrow, the 6th, as that's the Easter Monday public holiday. So it's next Monday, April 13th, at the First Pelican Point Sea Scouts facility, which is number 12 Australia 2 Drive in Crawley. Doors are open at 7 p.m. for 7:30 p.m. start, with the usual tea, coffee and refreshments available, and visitors are welcome. Among other things, we'll be doing further planning for our upcoming swap meet and junk sale, which is a couple of months' time, Saturday, June 13th, out at the Midland Mechanics Hall in Bellevue, and we'll be looking at some future working bee dates. Speaking of working bees, big thanks to the WAG crew who attended the Tick Hill repeater site a couple of weeks back on March 24th. We didn't get all the work done on the day, but got a good start on replacing the securing bolts on the main towers. There's plenty left to do up there, and we'll be back there sometime soon at Tick Hill, so if anyone would like to attend the next one, please let us know and we'll keep you informed. Also, the new 23 SEM repeater for Tick Hill is still back with ICOM being repaired. We had an update the other day, and it seems now a number of internal parts and modules need replacement, so there'll be a further wait while these parts are sourced. We appreciate everyone's patience with this, especially those who donated funds for this 23 SEM project, but the problems of this nature were not something we expected. We're quite grateful for ICOM's support in repairing the unit under warranty, but it's likely still a few weeks before we get it back and return the 23 SEM to service. So, look forward to seeing everyone at the WAG tech session on April the 11th, 10 a.m. at Wireless Hill, or the WAG meeting, Monday the 13th at 7:30 p.m. at Pelican Point. And of course, our weekly technical and general net still happens, Sundays, 10:30 a.m. on VK6RLM, 146.750 and connected All-Star repeaters. Once again, we thank the team at News West for putting this to air, and this has been Anthony, VK6AXB, on behalf of WAG.
Foundations of Amateur Radio. Still excited from my minor victory in discovering a missing puzzle piece associated with the project I'm working on, I spent the past week introducing my head, if not literally at least figuratively, to the surface of my desk in a traditional head-desk troubleshooting move that you might be familiar with. I suppose it's an improvement on the bear-with-a-toothache approach. In short, the yak is losing hair. Rapidly. You might be wondering why I'm telling you about it, since in the land of milk and honey nothing ever goes wrong and all the answers are presented on a silver platter. Except when they're not. Within the amateur radio community, it appears to me that the inclination to fiddle is ingrained and widespread. Given that the hobby is all about experimentation and learning, that's not a bad thing. But there are times when this behaviour can be counterproductive. Specifically when you're troubleshooting. Faced with a problem, there are times when a systematic approach is warranted. For some, the first time they come across this phenomenon is during the practical test component of their amateur radio licence. Presented with the station, they're asked to determine why it's not working. The problem might be a power supply that isn't plugged in, or a disconnected antenna, the mode button set to FM, the squelch closed, the RF gain set to zero, generally something simple. Those inexperienced in the art of troubleshooting are more likely than not inclined to try everything, sometimes all at once, in the hope that one of the changes will magically fix the issue, but in reality often making the problem worse. There is a better way. I'm mentioning this because this skill applies to many aspects of life and in the decades that I've been here, it's not something I was ever taught. It's funny to think that a quote from nearly a century ago applies to this skill. When you have eliminated all which is impossible, then whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth. The salient point being, eliminating all which is impossible. In other words, you're not finding the problem, you're eliminating all the things that are not the problem. Another way is to think of it as finding all the things that don't need fixing. While that might sound weird, in deeply interdependent systems like an amateur radio station or a computer, that approach can help you find the root cause of an issue, and with it, the path to a potential fix. Of course, this process invites you to examine where the issue might exist. Experience will teach you that you need to start small and grow the net, rather than cast wide and narrow it down. That's not to say that you need to stop paying attention to the bigger picture. In the example of an inoperative station, you might discover that the lights in the room are out and that this coincides with the radio being off. In other words, trying to discover if the antenna is disconnected makes little sense, since there's no power to the radio. In my case, I'm balancing my efforts between maintaining an existing system whilst attempting to deploy a new one to replace it. I'm working on several related issues on multiple fronts. Their common theme is audio, though the specifics differ depending on which computer I'm looking at. Then there's the installation and ongoing care and maintenance associated with keeping GNU radio running. It's a balancing act because while this is happening, I still need to look for work, respond to email, deal with the regulatory requirements for accounting and tax returns, not to mention the myriad projects I have going on at any given time. At this point, I could go into deep and disturbing detail about the technology issues I'm juggling, and I could even justify it by pointing out that a problem shared is a problem halved. But truth be told, I'm not sure you're up for a treatise on the comings and goings of forced system security updates and arising bugs. And just so we're clear, this is not the company who brought us a talking paperclip. It's the one who gave rise to companies called Orange and Lemon. On the GNU radio front, there's a snake-based installer that happily installs two incompatible libraries for the same application, causing it to fail, and a beer-related one that fails to install dependencies. At least I can use apt-get on a real system. That said, juggling problems and all, I did manage to actually hear an FM station being decoded across the network. It did help that I actually connected the antenna to the radio, and I'm ignoring the audio buffer underruns or overruns, depending on the weather, or some other unknowable variable, but I suspect that's all part of the learning I'm in the middle of. Hopefully the hair will grow back soon. I'm Ono, Victor Kilo 6, Foxtrot Lima, Alpha Bravo.
Good morning, this is Roy, VK6X-Ray Victor. Here again for today. It's Easter. I hope you're having fun out there in the outback, wherever you are. Having fun. It's Easter Sunday, and today we have the following for you for the 5th of April, 2026. I have a Maxon Papa Mike 100 UHF 70cm transceiver, complete with manual, for $50. I have a pair of Bofang handheld transceivers, including the charging power supply units. $50 for those, there's two of them. There's also a Zatagi Hotel Papa 12-S variable power supply, 12-volt variable, $50 for that. And you may contact Keith, VK6 Papa Tango. His email address is keithpedersen962@gmail.com. I'll spell Kilo Echo India Tango Hotel Papa Echo Tango Echo Romeo Sierra Oscar November figures 962@gmail.com. That's all I have for this week. If you have any ideas for next week's broadcast, please do contact me, and I will endeavour to get your gear dispatched to a new home, or whatever it is you are requiring. The email address, which you probably all know by now, is vk6xrayvictor@bigpond.com. Just to add to ad nauseam, vk6xrayvictor@bigpond.com. And this is Roy, vk6xrayvictor. Thank you once again. Hope you're having a great weekend. It's very nice weather out there for Easter. Makes a change. That's good. And 7-3 from me.
And that's the news for Sunday, 5th April 2026. Thank you to the production team who put the news together each week. There is a lot that goes on behind the scenes. Thank you to the regular contributors. This news production happens each week because you take the time to record your article. Please keep them coming. And also, thank you to those that put the news to air each week. Please stand by now for callbacks. If you have never called back for one reason or another, please take this opportunity to have a go. We would all like to hear your call. If you listen via a podcast or downloaded via the website, please take a moment or two to register on the vk6.net, as the growing number of registrations encourages us to keep up production. For now, this is Coolio for VK6EK73.